This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. The sooner there's a proper Prime Minister in place, the better. At least, that's what Captain John Hamilton thought, pacing up and down the bridge of the Ferret as the sun set over Calais in the late afternoon of December the 8th, 1834. The thought of a new Prime Minister replacing the lame duck currently in the role was still small consolation for the experienced skipper, who couldn't set off for Dover until a very important passenger arrived. Thing was, nobody was quite sure when that would be. A northeasterly was blowing up, and the longer they had to wait, the rougher the crossing would get. The passengers, already delayed by several hours, were restless enough already, as well as being unhappy that an entire saloon had been sequestered for the exclusive use of Sir Robert Peel and his family. There were footsteps on the ladder up to the bridge, and the face of the British Consul for Calais appeared in the doorway, flushed and excited, even though he was barely level with the captain's knees. "They're here," he announced, half gasping. "They're here." Two carriages had appeared on the quayside, from which emerged three servants, wrestling down the luggage from the roof, and then, with what Captain Hamilton saw as a kind of irritated dignity, Sir Robert Peel himself, followed by his wife and their two young children. Peel had been enjoying his holiday, being out of the country for the fallout from Earl Grey's resignation and the mess Lord Melbourne inherited from him. Let the Whigs be the architects of their own downfall, he'd thought. Then, when he returned, it would be in time for his Tories to sweep into power with a landslide mandate. But no. A frantic, sweaty civil servant had accosted him at his Rome hotel to tell him that in his absence King William IV had intervened and made Peel Prime Minister, much earlier than Peel would have liked. He would be leading a minority government, which would make passing legislation tricky. Still, them's the breaks. The civil servant was a 24-year-old named James Hudson, who had arrived back in London 3 days earlier with letters from Peel accepting the post without the vulgar inconvenience of an election, and assurances that the new Prime Minister was hairing across Europe right behind him. William IV had always been suspicious of his Whig government and their dastardly attempts at social and constitutional reform. His Prime Minister, Earl Grey, had finally managed to push through the Great Reform Act in 1832, extending the vote beyond a privileged few in an attempt to at least reduce the amount of political corruption in Britain. He'd resigned when the King refused to allow him to appoint Whig peers to the House of Lords to help actually pass the bill. But popular demand had brought him back. But in July 1834, Grey resigned again over disagreements regarding British policy in Ireland. William didn't approve of Grey's successor, Lord Melbourne, and the dangerous radicals he felt made up his government. And by November, enough pressure had been exerted to have Melbourne throwing in the towel and William sacking the government. The King gleefully appointed the Tory, Sir Robert Peel, to succeed Melbourne. The trouble was, Peel was out of the country, on holiday with his family. In the 1830s, holidays, the preserve of the stinkingly wealthy, were major operations. Peel had planned to be away for months, possibly until the following Easter, and nobody was entirely sure where he was. the Duke of Wellington was put in temporary charge of the country, and James Hudson, the secretary to the personal secretary to the king, dispatched to find the unwitting new prime minister somewhere in Europe as soon as he possibly could. Now Hudson did a pretty amazing job. Setting off on Sunday the 16th of November 1834, he reached Dover just in time to see the day's last steamer puffing out of the port and heading for Calais. With no time to lose, he hired a boat to row him across the channel to Boulogne, a journey made in a pretty speedy 4 hours. And by noon the next day, he was in Paris, learning that Peel was somewhere in Italy. Probably. Possibly. There was no sign of the new PM in any of the hotels in Turin, and none of the hotels in Milan, where Hudson was delayed by a day and a half when his passport was confiscated. In Bologna, he learned the Peels had been there, but had headed for Florence, where he arrived to discover they'd just departed for Rome. On the way there, he was delayed by flooding, forced to abandon his luggage and take a roundabout route before arriving in Rome tired, covered in mud, and wearing somebody else's boots. It was just 9 days after he left London, and within half an hour of arriving, he had found out where Peel was staying and learned that he was at a ball that evening. So he had a bath, borrowed some clothes from the landlord of the inn he'd booked into, went to Peel's hotel, sat down and waited. When the new Prime Minister rolled in from the ball, he took the news of his unexpected promotion to the highest office in the land pretty much in his stride, even giving Hudson a bit of a dressing down for taking such a roundabout route when he, Peel, would have shaved at least a day off the journey if he'd done it himself. Marvelling briefly that he'd learned he was Prime Minister when he was as far from London as he'd ever been, and ever would be, Peel dashed off letters to the King and to Wellington, sent Hudson back to London with them, and went upstairs to pack. At Boulogne, Hudson again just missed the last steamer of the day, and was forced to cross the Channel in an open boat before reaching London in the early hours of the 5th of December. It was the fastest return journey between London and Rome anyone had ever made. The Peels, meanwhile, dashed north via Turin, Genoa, Lyon and Paris before reaching Calais, where the ferret was waiting, boilers stoked, ready to transport them across the Channel. As the Peels settled into their accommodation, Captain Hamilton oversaw a swift departure and navigated the ferret out of the harbour and into the darkness. The wind being against them, and with a heavy swell, the crossing was not a pleasant one. It was nearly midnight, 6 hours after they'd left Calais, when Hamilton guided the ferret alongside the quay at Dover, allowing Peel to set foot on British soil for the first time as Prime Minister. If only he hadn't been in such a tearing hurry, not to mention still feeling the after-effects of the rough crossing, he might have paused to reflect on the moment. But with his wife and children pale with seasickness, he hurried to the vast ship hotel on the quayside, sent a messenger to London with news of his arrival, arranged for his family to recover from the crossing in a suite, ordered a carriage, and within 20 minutes of walking down the gangplank of the ferret, was already on the road to London. The big cheeses of Dover woke the next morning to the crushing news that Sir Robert Peel, the Prime Minister, had passed them like ships in the night, on a ship in the night. A rumour had rampaged around the town the previous Saturday that Peel was arriving on the afternoon packet. Waistcoats were hastily buttoned and boots buffed, stays quickly tied and carriages brought to front doors ahead of a scramble for the best positions on the quayside to greet this most eminent arrival. They even dragged a pair of cannon down from the castle to the harbour to give Peel a proper salute. Bunting was hastily strung up and a band assembled, fastening collars and polishing horns as the Salamander docked. But as a baffled bunch of passengers disembarked, to be greeted by a group of red-faced men puffing out their chests and holding in their stomachs, their wives in full taffeta sail behind them, and as a shower of sleet flung itself out of a leaden sky over the scene, it became clear that Sir Robert Peel was not among them. When the new Prime Minister did eventually arrive, not only was everyone tucked up in bed, Peel himself passed through so quickly he'd barely noticed he'd been in Dover at all. That was A Coastal Story, and I'm Charlie Connolly. You can follow us on Twitter at Podcast Coastal, that's at Podcast Coastal, or find us on Facebook by searching for Coastal Stories Podcast. Links as ever in the show notes, and until next time, go well in the chaos.